time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 183 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, unfortunately, I have been unable to put together a new interview for you. At this moment, I'm in between the Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Florida Supercon down near Miami. I only had a few days to put things together, and the internet where I live is out, so I wasn't able to record an interview. But I thought what I would do is present what I consider two classic interviews with one of my favorite comics creators, David Peterson from MouseGuard. Neither of these interviews have appeared on MajorSpoilers.com before, and I think there's a lot of good content in there for people who are fans of the book and fans of Mr. Peterson, who was quite a fan-friendly creator and someone whose example I wish more comics pros would follow. The first interview was a brief one, and it took place back several years ago at a Baltimore Comic Con. Then the second one took place about a year later, and I was better at interviewing at that point, and the interview goes longer, but we talk about several things I think are still relevant today. Now, granted, we will discuss some material that's already come out, but I think you'll still learn a lot listening to what Mr. Peterson has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
Mice struggle to live safely and prosper among all of the world's harsh conditions and predators. The Mouse Guard, a selfless group of cloaked mice, keep the common mouse safe from predators, weather, and the wilderness. They patrol the mouse territories to allow mouse civilization not just to survive, but thrive. It matters not what you fight, but what you fight for.
We're talking with David Peterson, the creator of the popular Mouse Guard series of comics, during the recent Baltimore Comic Con. David, what inspired you to create Mouse Guard?
Mouse Guard kind of grew out of an idea that I had in high school of doing a fantasy comic with animals. It was very much a kind of homage. At that state, it was kind of an homage to Disney's Robin Hood. And then in high school, I never really got anything accomplished with that project. But it always kind of, I liked the idea, especially when I took it back to the base idea of fantasy adventure, but with animals. And in college, I kind of re-examined it, took it back to those roots, and said, let's mix Aesop's Fables with Dungeons & Dragons adventures and do that kind of thing. And I thought I could have a lot of fun with the different animals, different species of animals, and treat them almost like Tolkien would different races, and really build cultures and stuff. And that all of a sudden became very daunting, because instead of just having humans, elves, and dwarves or something like that, I had hundreds of animal species to deal with. So I thought I'll work on the smallest creatures because I need to make sure that they can survive the story. And so I started working with the mice, and that just became the heart of the story.
One of the things that makes Mouse Guard so unique is that it is not an anthropomorphized story in which animals are almost always turned into humans. You don't do that. Instead, you use what appears to be real mice as if they could really hold swords in their hands. What made you go that route?
I went that route with the more natural body types because, for one, I thought I wanted to make sure I was getting away from that high school idea of the Disney's Robin Hood thing. And then also, when I kind of went back to the origin of the concept, it being more like Aesop's Fables. So the real animals are part of the key. And then ultimately, it helps the reader, I think, sympathize for the mice. These aren't cartoon mice. These aren't human mice that can squash and stretch or lift great weights or something like that. These are real mice. So when you see a snake towering over it, the more realistic I draw the mouse, the more fear I think the reader has for the characters.
You recently did a series of books called The Legends of the Mouse Guard, in which you had other creators tell stories in your universe. What was it like to have others play in your backyard?
It was an absolute pleasure to have the other folks jumping in and doing work in Mouse Guard. The what would seem daunting, I think, to most creators is that you're having other people come in and work with your characters and your story. But the way I set up Legends is that all of the stories that the guest artists are doing are tall tales. So they won't affect canon, you know, the canon story. And one of my rules was stay away from existing characters. Make up your own. Make up histories. Make up fake battles. Make up all this kind of stuff and flesh it out. Just have fun with the idea of mice with swords and mice living in these kind of towns and what the guard is. And you can make up new guard mice and have them come and save the day. And so with that setup, it makes it a lot easier to turn over the reins. The other part of the project that Arkea and I agreed on was that I get to handpick all the creators and approve anybody who's going to be working on the book. So I went after people that I knew were going to do a good job, that specifically would fit well with Mouse Guard. Even if most people wouldn't think so, that some of the styles are vastly different from what I do, both in terms of art-wise and also storytelling. But as long as the themes were going to fit in right, as long as the heart of the story was going to work in a Mouse Guard setting, I knew it would all work out.
Have you ever considered producing an animated Mouse Guard series or movie? Would this be better if it was hand-drawn or perhaps in a CGI format?
We are currently in discussions with a studio about making this into a 3D animated film, CG-rendered mice. And the reason that I'm going CG, I love traditional 2D animation. And I wish that there was more of it. I don't think Mouse Guard's the right project for it. I think that so much of what Mouse Guard is about texture and atmosphere and a line quality and my stippling and that kind of stuff. That to translate, I think you end up having to do really textured, a textured final product. So to be able to get the kind of nap of the cloth, the texture and coarseness of some characters' fur or the fluffiness of other characters' fur, the texture of rocks and all that kind of stuff. And really, I think with Mouse Guard, the atmosphere, or the background, the nature is almost a character. So I don't get to deal with movement because it's a still image in the book. But I really imagine that in those scenes, the grass is blowing, the leaves are rustling, and just being able to animate the atmosphere, the background, in a traditional two-dimensional drawn animated film, I think would kill the budget right there. And that's not even the characters and all the other, stuff going on. So I think done right, a CG animated film is going to be the truest vision of Mouse Guard brought to cinema.
There's some irony that if it doesn't look realistic, that doesn't look true to the spirit of Mouse Guard.
Sure, and for animation, for hand-drawn animation, you generally have to simplify shapes to make them easier to draw from any angle. So I don't think that what Mouse Guard needs is simplification when it comes to theaters. I think it needs to be more complex, more rich. You're getting that added element of time and even some depth of space with animation. So that's what I can't do in the books, so that's what a movie should be able to bring to something like Mouse Guard.
For someone who may not have read the books, are these characters based on classic ones, like those from King Arthur's court?
The characters are kind of a simplified version of Friends of Mine. I remember hearing an interview with Frank Oz where he talked about the Muppets and the Muppet characters, and he said these characters don't work in a vacuum. They play off of each other. It's the relationships between characters. Piggy by herself is just irritating, or Kermit by himself could get to be just a little dull. It's when Kermit has to react to the craziness of Piggy or Gonzo, or where he becomes the long-suffering show manager is where... That's where Kermit's personality is. But without those other characters to bounce off of, that doesn't work. So I thought, if I'm going to get good characters, I need to have relationships that I really understand. And I really understand the relationships between my friends and I. I simplified them in kind of exaggerated qualities and said, let's take this trait about this person and this trait about this person and play those off of each other. And in some ways, then, they fit kind of archetypal elements. You've got the hothead, angry character. You've got the calm, cool, collected leader who's maybe even a little long-suffering. You've got the innocent newbie who's learning the ropes as he goes and maybe growing up faster than he would normally. So part of that's based on friends of mine. Part of that's just taking archetypal characters from mythology and stories throughout time and kind of having my fun with them with mice.
So are you one of these characters?
I am. Saxon is based on me. He's the red-cloaked hothead. And it's because I can be kind of short of temper and do foolish things in the heat of the moment rather than just sitting down and thinking about it. And I try to play up that part of Saxon where it usually gets the better of him. It's a fault. It's a flaw. It's not an admirable quality. Every now and then it's cool, and sometimes some kids come up and they want specifically, oh, I want a drawing of Saxon. I love Saxon. I think, well, that's neat that you love Saxon, but I hope it's not for the wrong reasons.
Thanks to David Peterson for taking time out to talk with us during a busy Comic-Con.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
On a long journey to Glenstone, I sailed right into its shade. There before me, she proudly shone, my decision was already made. Alas, who bore the light of the town? Her fur of ivory thread. How she danced is stuck in my crown, and back to this glen my boat led. 20-some seasons have since passed, since her eyes and mine both met. Through lands unnamed and wildly vast, my blade slaying every thread. Wolf, hawk, fox, and snake can't stand in my way. My body is weak and it may break. Today.
Okay, I'm talking today with David Peterson, the creator of Mouse Guard, one of my very favorite comics out today. And how are you doing today, David?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. It's been a little while since we spoke back at Baltimore Comic Con a year or two back, but I still love the book. I think Mouse Guard is one of the best comics out there.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I really think it ought to be in high schools, if not in younger grades, libraries, because I just think it's a great book. It exposes kids to great art and interesting stories and literature on a certain level. And so I just think it's a great comic.
It has been used selectively by various teachers at elementary, middle school, and high school levels. Some of those teachers have reached out to me about how they're integrating Mouse Guard into their classroom. So some people are already taking your advice.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to know I'm on the same page as other folks are. That's good to know. Now, I usually like to ask people, and I didn't get to do it on the floor of Baltimore Comic Con, is how did you get into reading comics? How did you get started?
I know that I read my sister's Archie comics, they were 7 and 8 years older than me. And so by the time I was getting around to maybe reading those, they were already bagged up and in the attic. Mm-hmm. And I read some of them. I read them casually, but it was always those were their comics, or I didn't really get into the collecting aspect. And maybe part of it was that Archie comics didn't tend to have a continuing storyline. It was more like a sitcom kind of setup. But, you could come in at any point and leave at any point and kind of know what was going on. But I want to say I was around 11 when I discovered both the X-Men and the Ninja Turtles. The X-Men books that I started with, I think it was after that Marvel Hasbro Sunbow Productions X-Men animated thing that later was titled Pride of the X-Men as a standalone thing. That had been on TV, and I thought those characters were pretty cool, and I found a comic that was a classic X-Men. Now I'm going to blank on what number it was, but it was the ones where they were taking the old Dave Cockrum and Chris Claremont issues, removing all the ads, slapping a new Art Adams cover on it, and putting a new John Bolton, Chris Claremont backup story at the end. I read one of those, and just I read that issue over and over and over, and then the other thing was the Ninja Turtles, when the first color edition came out from first, what they called the Turtles graphic novels. Yeah, book one of that I asked for as a, I think a Christmas gift, and I read the heck out of that thing. I still have it. It's in bad shape because of how much I enjoyed going through it over and over and over again. But yeah, X-Men and Ninja Turtles were my first real comic loves where I got into comics and then had to try to find what was next.
That makes me think of two things. Number one, you're a reader, which not everybody who buys comics reads them. Some of them board and bag them the moment they get them and have no idea whether the pages inside are actually blank pages or actually have any artwork on them. And so to me, I'm a reader too. I take them home and I read them. I collect certain ones, but most of the rest of them, I want to be able to read the stories. And that's the point of this, is to read. The second thing that makes me think of is you've been doing covers for a micro series of Turtles. So you're coming full circle now. You're getting to actually draw. I think you're doing the Rat.
I'm not doing any of the interiors. I'm doing all the covers for the micro series, which are the one-shot issues. Each issue focuses on one particular character. So I did a cover for each Turtle. And then I've done one for Splinter, the rat character. And then there are still three more to do after that.
How did you get to do that? Did they know that this was one of the first things that you read?
No, they didn't. I had even tried to approach Peter Laird when he still owned the rights to the Turtles several years ago, and he was doing the Tales of the TMNT series, because I just thought, man, I could really knock out a Turtle story or do some Turtles covers or whatever. And the Tales of the TMNT was all about that. It was showcasing other talent doing them. But I found out through a mutual friend that they had everything booked up at least a year in advance. And then I thought, well, I'll ask him in a little while and see if maybe I can get on that list. And then it wasn't long after that that he sold the rights to Nickelodeon. So I'd kind of give it up on the idea that I'd really ever get to be able to do Turtles comics. And an editor at IDW reached out to me about doing maybe some Godzilla comic covers. Because he had seen my covers on the Muppet books that I had done for Boom and also a fan of Mouse Guard. And I said, well, I'm far enough behind with Mouse Guard right now that I just don't feel like I can take cover work unless it's something that I absolutely love. And while I have nothing against Godzilla, I don't have any particular affinity for Godzilla. So just please keep me in mind for anything else you've got coming up. And he sent me an email about 20 minutes later saying, do you have any particular affinity for the Turtles? And I hammered out the fastest, longest email in the shortest amount of time I have ever done. And it was trying to explain and sum up my love of the Turtles, how it started me not just reading comics, but also drawing comics, playing role-playing games, because that was the first role-playing game I ever played, just creating stories. I used to sculpt statues of the Ninja Turtles for myself and all kinds of stuff like that. I was a Ninja Turtle one year for Halloween, and then I already had some Ninja Turtle drawings, so I was able to send him samples in that. You know, he sent me an email, and 5 minutes later, he had a page and a half long email of explaining everything I could about what the Turtles meant to me with art samples.
So he knew he hit a nerve at that point.
Yeah, and I got a job, so.
Wow, very good. Very cool. Now, as far as writing Mouse Guard, you and I, when we talked before, talked about the fact that you chose the mice because they can be very sympathetic characters. I was just curious as to how did the whole creation of the comic come about? Because you do things very differently from everybody else. You have a different size book. It's very artistic in the sense that it looks like painted art in many ways. It's so many things different about Mouse Guard in an era where everything has to be cookie cutter to survive, to fit on the shelves. What was it about doing it your way that made this happen?
Well, I think we talked the last time about how Mouse Guard had started out as something that I was thinking about doing in high school. And when I was in high school, I very much wanted to be a comic artist. Mm-hmm. That was the job. Mm-hmm. As I was getting out of high school and getting into college, I was looking at the comics that were on the shelf and looking at the kind of artwork I did and just not knowing if comics was really the right way for me to tell a story. I knew I wanted to tell stories in some way, but I had no idea if it was going to be through stop-motion animation or puppetry projects or written prose books with spot illustrations that I'd illustrate or what. I had no idea. All of a sudden, my focus became scattershot. I could kind of do anything is what I was thinking. And different projects, different concepts, I tried to link up with whatever might have been the best outlet for that. You know, this should probably still be a comic if I ever do it, or this should probably be a prose novel, or this should be puppets or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Mouse Guard, or what became Mouse Guard, I had no idea what to do with it. I kept going back and forth between comic or book or whatever. I ended up doing it as a comic because I set up at the Motor City Comic Convention at the request of a friend of mine who said that he was setting up at the comic convention and I should come sit next to him. Mm-hmm. And I just took samples of all of my work, stuff that I had done that was essentially fan art, drawings of superheroes or paintings of superheroes. I had pencil drawings that were characters from Dungeons and Dragons type adventures. I had children's book style illustrations. I had concept sketches for Mouse Guard. Mm-hmm. And just because I happened to be at a comic book convention and someone said, "When does this book come out?" is what really jump-started it into becoming a comic. I had certainly given it thought before, but I don't know that if at that time I knew it should be a comic or not. And then the size issue came about because at that local convention, everybody and their brother does mini comics. Mm-hmm. And before I did Mouse Guard, I had been told by a professional, make sure that before you spend your own money to do like a real printing on something, print up some mini comics, the Xerox copier style, folded 8.5 by 11 sheet. But because everybody does it and they're a little smaller than regular books, I thought if someone's walking down the middle of the aisle, what's going to draw them over to my table to see what's actually in my mini comics? Mm-hmm. I toyed with the idea of using legal sized paper instead of letter sized paper. Mm-hmm. And when you fold that, you get something that's, 8.5 by 7. Mm-hmm. I liked that it was a different size. And then when I started playing around with layout ideas, I really liked the pushed horizontal panels. Horizontal panels have way more impact on that kind of squarish shape. I realized I could do almost David Lean style mm-hmm. cinematography in comic book form. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was ready to self-publish that first issue of Mouse Guard and I was gathering all my facts of where I would have it printed, etc., print-on-demand had become a very viable option. Mm-hmm. The print-on-demand company that I used said custom sizes, no extra charge. Mm-hmm. So to make it easier on myself, you saw how I struggled there for a second trying to remember what the dimensions of a folded legal size piece of paper was. If I just make it the same dimension across as it is tall, mm-hmm. I'll only ever have to remember one dimension, one measurement. So that's how it got to be the 8x8 book, was that the initial print-on-demand place didn't have an extra charge for it, and I was lazy and not wanting to do math.
Now, for people who may not have ever picked up Mouse Guard, which I can't believe there are people like that, but I'm sure there are, why don't you explain what Mouse Guard's about?
Okay. In really basic terms, it's mice with swords, medieval mice with swords, but mice are pretty low on the food chain, and there are larger predators in the world that would eat them. Most everything will eat mice, unless they're other grain eaters. So the mice have a civilization to try to not just survive these predators, but actually to live and have culture and art, experience life, to make sure that in case a city is penetrated, it doesn't wipe out the entire population. The population has spread out amongst many settlements, with vast distances between them, and the cities are hidden away to make it harder for predators to infiltrate or even find the mouse cities. But this ends up making the mice prisoners of their own cities. It's hard for them to travel from one to another, to get goods from one place to another. So the Mouse Guard is there to patrol the safe ways and pathways between the towns, to deliver mail from one place to another, to escort goods, whatever. Or if something starts to set up a camp right outside of a mouse city, like an owl starts to build a nest in the tree that's above the entrance to one of the cities, the guard is there to try to encourage that owl to leave, even if it means dealing in mortal combat. So that's Mouse Guard. There's been two main story series so far. Fall 1152, it's an introduction to Mouse Guard and the world of it and how the Guard as an entity functions. Mm-hmm. Winter 1152 is a follow-up book that was more character-driven and starts to really get into the characters. and starts with the characters out in a really bad winter storm, one that they normally wouldn't be out in, but because of a need for medicine, they're out there. And then the rest of the book really just becomes the trip home. Mm-hmm. The easiest part, they've got the medicine, everything's good, now it's just time to get home. That's the rest of the book, and how getting home isn't always as easy as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the cool things about the way that you draw the mice is that they look like mice. They're not anthropomorphic. You know you're doing something right when somebody mimics what you're doing. And after Mouse Guard came out, I won't mention their name or anything, but I saw another book come out that had everything that I was afraid Mouse Guard would be, anthropomorphic mice completely wearing armor and all this kind of stuff. And I kept looking at it going like, boy, I can't touch that book because this book is so good. And the thing that makes me smile is that if a mouse could stand up on its back feet and hold a sword and wear a cape, that's what Mouse Guard looks like. And I think that's one of the most endearing things about it is it looks like something that is much more likely to take place in our world than other things appear to be.
Well, thank you. The other book that you're referring to actually had a life before Mouse Guard.
Oh?
I just didn't know about it. So when it came out, unfortunately, I had the same reaction of, you know, how dare they? And the creators of that book and myself, we all got together and discussed it and decided that because there were the inherent differences, they were telling a totally different kind of story. They were anthropomorphizing their characters a bit more. It's a darker tone of book. There actually wasn't really an overlap that was harmful.
Oh.
If anything, we figured that fans of one would probably be fans of the other. But it's nice that both of those can exist and that in existing, one helps define the other. As you said, theirs is slightly more anthropomorphized. They have more human clothing and armor than mine do. And what that lets me do is really explore the kind of stories I want to tell, which are the mice that look like the way I draw them and are clothed the way I draw them.
And the more natural things, for example, the Black Axe number 4 just came out, and they're fighting a fox in there. And in number 3, they're fighting another animal in there. So they end up, they fought, didn't they go after a bear at one point, I thought?
There was a bear that was in a Free Comic Book Day story from a couple of years back. They don't actually fight it. But yeah, all of the animals are appropriate in scale and predator-prey relationships in Mouse Guard. So
goodness.
They've gone up against owls and snakes and foxes and weasels and fishers, and we've seen them up against, in scale, against bears and all sorts of stuff.
Now, see, the thing that makes me want to cheer for them is these are very small but courageous creatures fighting things that are so much larger than they are. It'd be like an individual trying to fight a rhinoceros or something. And it's very unlikely for us to do that, to win with that, but you have to feel for them and you have to cheer for them. And when they find a way to win, I want to stand up and just applaud. They actually win.
Well, that's great. That's great. Thank you.
It's a cool thing. Now, the current series you're in is The Black Axe. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that series is about? Because it's a little different from the previous two.
Yeah, it's a prequel story. It takes place about 40 years before the Fall story takes place. And it's focusing on really one of the characters who's an older mouse in the Fall and Winter books. But this is him as a younger mouse. When we're introduced to him in Fall, he's already this legendary old hero character who wields a weapon called the Black Axe. Mm-hmm. And in the Winter book, he actually promises to tell another character about the day his paw first touched the Black Axe itself. Mm-hmm. The Black Axe series is my fulfilling that promise to the fans. Here's the story of when his paw first touches the Black Axe. So it's a bit of a quest story. It's a prequel story where we get to know more about a character that we already know some about, but we don't know everything. And it's a story about family and myth and legend and sacrifice.
It's just great. I mean, I love the stories. I'm just gripped. Now, you also do the lettering, don't you? Not only do you paint and draw the stuff and color it, and I think you do it in Photoshop, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, all the colors are digital.
And you also do the lettering?
Yes.
Okay, so this is totally your game, the whole thing.
Yep.
Wow.
I can take credit if people like it, and I have to be the one at fault if people don't or it's late.
Now, number 4 just came out, and I think there's 6 in Black Axe.
Yes. Yeah.
So we've got 2 more to come.
Yeah, the main story arcs are always 6 issues long. So, yeah, 2 more to come.
Any word on as to when number 5 and 6 will be coming out?
I have to finish 5. I was actually working on it earlier today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to them, I tell you. Now, another thing that you did that I really enjoyed was you let other people play in your sandbox. And that was a series called Legends of the Guard, in which other people got to write and draw Mouse Guard stories. And they were fun to read as well. They have a little different take on it than you might. But it's nice to see that kind of thing happen once in a while.
Yeah, that was by design. That was by design to make sure that it was different. The setup of the book is that there's a mouse tavern where there's a storytelling contest going on. I draw the tavern scenes, and then as soon as a mouse goes into their story, that becomes the guest artwork. And so that person's artwork is supposed to represent not just the type of story that they're telling, but also essentially the intonation of that character's voice, their pacing, just like how you, when you meet different people and you can hear something in their voice that seems more sing-songy or more gruff, the artwork is supposed to be a representation of that. So I wanted it to look very different from mine. And the stories themselves are supposed to be these tall tales, these legends. So in that way, they have the total freedom to be different in aesthetic and different in how true or not true they could be. They're going to be able to do things that I would never be able to do in a Mouse Guard story because I have to make things fit into my own histories and deal with the consequences of once I put something in a Mouse Guard issue, it's there. Mm-hmm. They can do these kind of tall tale stories that, well, maybe it happened and maybe it didn't.
It could be just truly just some sort of made-up story that people are telling.
Exactly, exactly. It could be a Paul Bunyan, Babe the Blue Ox type thing where absolutely none of it's true.
Now, you've got other things coming on, too, as well as he's getting out. Before I leave Legend of the Guard, though, any chance we'll see another one of those?
Yes. Yeah, we're already working on a Volume 2, and most of the creators have already done their stories. I think we're about three-quarters of the way done with the guest contributions. I'm going to wait until I'm done with Black Axe Issue 6 before I start tackling any of my pages for the next Legends, because I don't want to delay Black Axe any more than it already has been. But we should be able to get a Legends Volume 2 out kind of on the heels of Black Axe.
Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward to that, because I enjoyed the first one tremendously. I thought that was great.
Yeah, we've got some amazing talent on this. Corey Godby, who has been doing stories in the Flight anthologies, and he's also going to be doing the Labyrinth book for Archaea, has a story. Stan Sakai has a story in this volume. A personal hero of mine, Rick Geary, is going to have a story. It's going to be a really good lineup.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, other things you do along the way, you don't only do these things, you do other pieces of art, and you have what's called a new Mouse Guard t-shirt. When this comes out, this will be out on the 16th, so you'll probably just be back from Chicago when this comes out. But you're going to be selling a shirt there, and it's got a neat drawing with like an eagle or a bird in the background, sort of a crest.
It's a crow, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done shirts through Cafe Press before, and they're okay. They do the job, but the printing on them isn't quite the quality that I was really hoping for. And the way the Cafe Press shirts tend to work best is when you've got a full-color image, like a panel from the book, printed on a white shirt. And I really wanted something a little more hip and fashionable than that, something like a two-tone, two-color design on a colored shirt. And I had tried doing some through Cafe Press, and they didn't turn out the way I wanted them to, because I realized I really need to go in and talk to a t-shirt printer to discuss the colors I need, what are the colors of the shirt, and some of the different techniques. So we found a local printer, and I did a design that was something just kind of generic, and not generic in the bad sense, but that it doesn't reference any particular story. So it's not like the shirt's going to go out of style because the fall book is 4 years old or whatever. This is kind of a timeless mouse with swords with a cool bird emblem behind him.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. It's really neat looking. I can see it on your blog, and that's at davidpeterson.blogspot.com if people want to have a look at it. And you're going to be able to sell them online before too long, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, if you go to mouseguard.net, click on David's blog, you'll get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We're printing these ourselves. I'm supposed to be picking them up from the printer pretty soon to take them to Chicago. And then Chicago's going to be the first test run of selling them in person. But yeah, eventually we will open that up to online sales as well.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I regret about is you don't have an XXL in there. You have small, medium, large, and XL.
Yeah, that's because we're trying this out. It's a never worked with this printer before. Mm-hmm. We've never sold t-shirts really before. And then the Cafe Press shirts can come in different sizes, but the prices, because those are print on demand, they're always higher priced. And so we never really felt like we got a good gauge of what the market actually was, because the price was a bit prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, now that we're doing something on our own, we wanted to start small, and we're going to really listen this weekend at C2E2, and as the emails, as we offer them online and see what email comments come in. And obviously, if there's enough request for larger sizes, we'll do that as well. But because we're doing it ourselves, we have to start small and build it up.
Okay. Well, that's my request anyway, is to make an XXL, because when I wash shirts, even if they're a little larger, they seem to shrink up on me. Yeah. So a little bigger is better because it'll last longer.
I hear you. I've also got the interesting dilemma of having fans that are 8 years old and fans that are 80 years old and everything in between. So small for me doesn't just have to mean adult small. I actually have to try to make sure I can get stuff that's available for kids as well. And we're hoping that the smalls that we'll have of these shirts will fit most kids. But yeah, on either end, I have to be able to probably go larger and smaller.
Wow. Now, there's two other little creations that you've got before I want to talk about future things that you're doing. There's a Sadie Papercraft of Liam, a little paper 3D version of the Liam character. And I think that's kind of cool. Apparently, you can download this and make it yourself. Is that how this works?
I have two characters. I have Liam and Sadie that I've done the Papercraft models for.
Ah.
And each character is a 2-page PDF that you can print out at home, and then you have to cut out each piece carefully, and there are instructions. Actually, it's a 3-page because 2 of the pages are the mouse and the actual pieces, and 1 page is instructions. And it has all the instructions for how to fold it and glue it together, and you end up with a little kind of blocky 3D model of a mouse character.
Very cool. And then there's also a book plate for this year that I guess when you're going to cons and you're going to be at several of them, you're going to have this book plate people can buy.
Yeah. I decided that often enough I'm at a convention and people will come up and say, oh, I didn't know that you were going to be here. Mm. And that happens no matter what, whether it's a last minute edition convention or if I've had it planned for a year and have promoted it for a year, I'll still have people come up and say, oh, I didn't know you were going to be here. I would have brought my books. Mm-hmm. And so this way, instead, I've printed up a nice little book plate. It says this book belongs to, and then they're signed and numbered. So that worst case scenario, they can get a book plate and take it back home with them and just paste it in their book. And that way they still have a signed book. And I plan on probably doing one of those every year from now on. So every new year, I'll have a new one for conventions. And I'll be doing something different. This year I did one that was like a traditional woodcut, and I have a printmaking background, so it was fun to go back to that for myself. And it also references the way that the mice in the comics would probably do some artwork. They'd be doing like traditional woodblock printing. But in future years, I plan to experiment with other styles and do something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. It's very neat looking. The mouse has got a hold of the sword in front of him, which is really cool looking. I like the look of it. It's really nice. Now, the other things I wanted to talk with you about, this on Free Comic Book Day, which is going to be the first Saturday in May, your mouse guard is part of a hardcover from Arkea?
Yeah, that's an incredible hardcover collection. It's going to be an amazing release. I guess today is the day that retailers started getting their Free Comic Book Day shipments in, and been following it on Twitter. Arkea has been retweeting as much as possible. The responses from retailers who are saying, I'm unpacking this box, and oh my gosh, the Arkea hardcover is going to be the book to get. It's amazing.
Because I go to 2 stores on a regular basis, and I went to both of them and said, you make sure you get me at least one of those, because I want to have those. Because honestly, when you put out the collected versions and hardcovers, they're really lovely to have. Paper copies will tend to get crunched under or stepped on accidentally and stuff. But if you've got a very nice hardcover, and not only does it look like it's a real book, people actually started to read it, I think they'd get engrossed in it as well. Great to have. I am so looking forward to that. Where in the book is the mouse guard part? Is it the first? Is it the last? Where is it coming?
It's the first. It's the first story.
Oh, very good.
Arkea really wanted to, with Free Comic Book Day, part of the goal is to bring in new readers, people who either haven't read comics in years or have never read comics, or people who are maybe already reading comics but just not reading books from that particular publisher. Maybe they're superhero people. They love their Batman and Superman but haven't really expanded outside of that. And so Free Comic Book Day is a really great way to introduce people to books. And Arkea felt like because there's such a focus in that company for really nice hardcover books, we spent a lot of time with the Mouse Guard books, and I know Arkea does with all the other books as well, spent a lot of time with the book design to make a really nice collection. It felt like a cheat to try to lure people in with flimsy comics. Arkea still does some of the flimsy issues for certain titles, like Mouse Guard, but in general, as a representation of what Arkea is, a hardcover represents Arkea better than anything else. So PJ, the head of the company, came up with the idea to do the Arkea hardcover, and it has a Mouse Guard story, it has a Labyrinth story, Jim Henson's Labyrinth, it has a story from Rust, one of Arkea's new hit titles that movie rights have already been picked up.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah. And it's got Cursed Pirate Girl, done by a friend of mine, Jeremy Bastion, who's an amazing talent, and Cowboy by Chris Iliopoulos, Nate Cosby. And Dapperman, Return of the Dapperman, Jim McCann and Janet Leigh, a book that won the Eisner last year for original graphic novel.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a heck of a collection.
Now, the cool thing is this is a free gift that you can go to the store and get. Now, of course, I would recommend people get there early.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a feeling that that these are going to go pretty quickly. And I just hope that most of the stores order a bunch of them, because I just know this is going to be something that people are going to want to have.
Yeah. I know that different stores tend to have different rules for Free Comic Book Days in years past of how many issues of something you can get, or whether you can pick out one book or one issue or three issues or five issues or things like that. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely no idea how they're going to come up with a way to make sure that all the hardcovers don't fly out the door in the first 5 minutes. So you might want to check, if you're interested in getting one, check with your local store or stores and find out if they're willing to tell you how they're releasing those, if there are special rules for getting the Archaea hardcover or what. But yeah, it's definitely going to be something worth trying to find.
I hope it's a yearly tradition from Archaea. I really do.
We'll see.
Really, really cool. Now, one of the things that you do, too, that I really enjoy, and I've watched them, is you'll be Ustreaming video when you're actually doing and finishing artwork. And it's fun to watch you go through Photoshop and what steps you take to actually make this stuff happen. I'm not an artist. I'm a connoisseur rather than a creator of this stuff. But for me, even as somebody who doesn't understand, to watch what you do is a real learning experience. And I think if somebody else is interested in creating comics or in creating art, I think this is something that people could really do. What's the best way for people to access, when you're Ustreaming, creating something?
When I'm Ustreaming, probably following me on Twitter. And I'm at MouseGuard on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do those almost on a whim. It comes down to when I've got something that I can work on that's not a MouseGuard page or something else that I need to keep quiet. Like the Turtles covers, IDW would prefer that those get released at a certain time. The image isn't seen beforehand, especially seen before their approvals. So I can't really Ustream on those kind of things or when I'm working on a MouseGuard page, because it might be a spoiler. But on the times where I'm doing something that's a side project or a spot illustration for something else, it's usually on a day where I realize I've got one of those that I can do, and I'm burned out on doing the regular pages. So I schedule some time in my day for a Ustream. So they're not really planned out in advance, but if you follow me on Twitter, that's going to be the best way to try to find out when I'm doing them.
I've seen it on Facebook, too.
Yes, I echo that on Facebook as well. That's true. Yeah. Either one. Facebook, you have to friend me first, which you're, of course, welcome to. I'm just me, David Peterson, on Facebook. So I guess that's why I thought the easiest way is probably to go through Twitter. But yeah, if you're already a friend of mine on Facebook, take a look at my status updates to see if I'm planning on doing one. And I do those, it's good to mention both Twitter and Facebook, and also my blog for this reason. The reason that I have all those outlets and the Ustream is that it takes me so long to do a MouseGuard issue. I realize that I'm incredibly slow, and as a fan, it must be very frustrating to wait for the next MouseGuard. And, you know, the MouseGuard website, I can only update so often because I only have new content to update it with so often. But with a blog, I do the weekly blog where I show some kind of a process or something that I've been working on, whether it's MouseGuard or not. With Twitter, I try to tweet at least once a day, try to include photos of things that I'm working on, kind of behind-the-scenes shots or photos of my pens for people who are curious about that. And the same kind of stuff on Facebook. And with Facebook, I have galleries of past work that I've done and cross-link to my blog with any further information on maybe the process of how I did that piece of artwork. And I do all that because, like I said, it takes so long that I want people to still have a way of contacting me and interacting with me so they don't think I died in between doing an issue and MouseGuard. You know, what's next? What's next? What's the next issue? Well, uh-huh. You can kind of daily check on either Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Ustream, or weekly with my blog that I'm still kicking and I'm still working on something.
Well, believe me, it's more than worth the wait. I would say if you haven't seen it in a while, it's going to be coming out shortly, and definitely keep your ear to the ground because it's definitely worth picking up. Now, one last thing I want to talk with you about is that as an artist, too, you also make a lot of appearances at comic book conventions. If you're not drawing and going out of cons, got other fish to fry, so that's really
good.
Yeah,
I tried to cut back on conventions last year to try to get more books done and figured that by this time this year I would have been caught up, and it's still not the case, so that looks like a really overwhelming list of conventions for me, but I'm going to make it work.
Well, I think it's great to be able to talk with you, and you're very approachable, too. I've noticed one of the very first interviews I did was with you on the floor of Baltimore Comic Con. I just sort of walked up and said, I love your work, and I'd love to interview you, and you said, let's do it now. So I had to get my brain into interview mode at that point. It was fun to do that. It was really great to be able to talk with you. David, I wish you much success going forward. I hope more people will pick up Mouse Guard, because I think it's a great success, but I think that it could do even better, and I'd like to see more people pick it up.
If they're interested, check with their local library, local bookseller, local comic bookshop, or through any of the online outlets for books and comics.
Now, if they want to read your blog or they want to go to your website, where do they go?
The easiest thing is to go to mouseguard.net and either look at the Mouse Guard site or click on David's blog to get to my blog that updates weekly on Tuesdays.
Okay. Well, David, always good to talk with you, and looking forward to more Black Axe coming out soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening to this special edition. Next week, the internet willing, I'll have a brand new interview with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.